fish heads, roly poly fish heads, fish heads, fish heads, eat them up, yum. Fish heads, fish heads, roly poly fish heads.
The morning, laughing happy fish heads in the evening.
Hey guys, welcome back to Catch It, Cook It, and Eat It. I'm here with a great old friend of mine. Not an old man, an old friend. No, this is not our old salty fisherman. This is our young and sprightly fisherman who just so happened to be my boss, my captain. This is Captain Rick Lofsted of Pura Vida Fisheries. Hey, Rick, are you there?
Ahoy there.
Ahoy. How are you?
Good, good.
It's been a long time.
It has, yes. Good to... It's good to talk with you, Ben.
Good to talk to you. So, fill these people in on exactly what I used to do for you.
Ben was a fish pimp in Union Square Markets and Brooklyn Markets, and selling my wares in the farmers markets of the city.
Right, but really, you're the fish pimp. The women came for Rick. I would try to do what you do. You know, like compliment. It was amazing. Like these girls in their suits, their work suits with their pumps, their heels on. They walk by, and you would be like, "Hello, lovely lady, you look beautiful today. How would you like some fish?" And I'm there, like cowering in the corner, like, "Are you kidding me? This woman obviously doesn't need any fish right now. She's on her way to a business meeting." Next thing I know, she's got like a soggy, wet fillet of fish, and she's taken off with it in her hand. So you're quite the the salesman. I don't know how one does it.
What is? No, just no. It sells for itself. It sells for itself. Not me. Not me. I just. It's got to be a desire and a need. So.
And it's not the easiest job. You have boats out of Shinnecock, right?
Correct.
And then you're, excuse me, you're bringing your fish into all the green markets, which I should say is some of the most beautiful fish that you can probably get in the city. And it's what, 24 hours out of the water generally?
In different, this time of year, we're fishing like 60, 80 miles offshore, but in general, it's the next day, or, you know, right. Especially in the spring, summer, fall, it's all next day.
Right. And, and then you bring it down to the market in a trailer, and this was always the part of the job that I wasn't so fond of. You have to unload the trailer at 5 in the morning or earlier, and it's freezing cold, middle of winter, and I should say you're really good at this, and you seem to love the hard work, the sweat, the tears, the whole thing. And but I can't say that I loved it as much as you did, the unpacking of the trailer.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It's a little bit, that's the only part I don't like myself, is setting up and breaking down. But selling, I like, and catching, I like. But and I hate to maintain the boat. That's another thing. Changing oils and fixing generators, and I hate that part. But maintenance, I don't mind. But
right. How how many boats do you have to maintain now, Rick?
Well, I have the big one, and I bought another one down south, and I'm building. I have another one just repairing right now, getting ready for spring here.
Mm-hmm. And this is interesting. Literally on my way over, I was listening to a report that was talking about PCBs and how they are now found in fish oil pills, and how it's a really good time to eat real fish because they just did these studies on these, you know, nutritional supplements and found that they're really high in PCBs. And I guess Rite Aid, CVS, GNC, all the big boys are getting sued. There's a nasty lawsuit right now. And apparently the only government regulated PCB contaminants, whatever, is in fish themselves, but not the pills that are made out of fish. And that literally, that just broke today. So it's a good time to eat fish from Pura Vida, apparently, unless you have heart issues. how do you, I mean, what's sort of your background in fishing and how did you come into it?
Well, I guess, a third generation. My grandfather came over from Norway and started a bait business in Captree, and then my grandmother got hit by a car, and my father decided to go meet my grandfather to stay home, and my father took care of the house and quit school at 14, and my uncle's the same, and so they supported the house, and then they stayed fishing, and then my father met up with a good friend of his, and they decided to buy a small dragger out of Islip, and and then and it was too cold to fish out of Islip because the bay kept freezing up, so they moved to Hampton Bays because actually moved to Montauk, and then we lived out there for like 6 years, and then we moved a little further west to Shinnecock.
Okay.
And so I've been doing it. I have five cousins that are all still fishermen.
Wow. And do you wish this upon your kids, the business?
I do. I think if they want, you know, I think they're smarter in some ways, but I have two little guys. They're 11 and 10, and I see them. They see them as a little bit rugged, and I think they might enjoy this.
Hmm. And Pura Vida, the name came from, I guess, from your Costa Rica experiences. Is that right? Aren't you married to a Costa Rican woman?
Yeah, Pura Vida means pure life, and translated from Spanish, and it. But it means more than pure life. It's an expression down there that they say from one person to another to, like, wish them well,
okay.
Good thoughts, good health, good, you know, good food, good good life, good love. You know, so it's sort of, it's not like Hakuna Matata, but it's a little blend like that.
And would you say that fishing is that for you?
I would say my lifestyle is like that for me. I'm thankful to be working, alive, healthy, have, you know, the peace of the sea some days, and the joy of meeting many, many customers one by one who eat the fish that I produce. So it's very rewarding, healthy, and...
And you're always outdoors, more than anyone
and
else.
And always outdoors, but it's the only thing I don't like is the drive back and forth to the city. That's getting wearing, but other than that, it's all right.
Yeah, and I would think, you know, I guess I was asking you this before, how the wear and tear on your body from all the manual labor has affected you, but you said it's exactly the opposite. Like you the hard work keeps you young and healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not the disciplined type to get up and go to the gym for an hour a day, and never has been, because I've always been working physically, and and so I mean, I see the old timers that are still alive and doing well, and they have great vision and good strength and good mind, and it's all from hard work. I think the hard work doesn't hurt you, but it's the stress that kills you, I think. So as long as I can stay away from that, I'll be all right.
Right. I'm really interested in the politics, I guess, in the green market, because, you know, at one point I went to the director and I said, I'm interested in doing some chowders, some soups, using all the vendors' products. And wouldn't that fit into sort of your prerequisites for what makes it okay? And I was confused because it didn't. And then it was kind of a combination of, you know, you're not really allowed to be doing too much manufacturing of the food. It more just has to be like growing or catching in your case. But I was really unclear. I was like, well, that just seems like the perfect combination, you know, using a little bit of everybody's product to make, you know, to make my own product. And it is political, isn't it? Getting into the market.
I think all of life is, you know, all of life is like that. But I think it's the hardest thing about the market is, teaching fishermen or farmers to do that for themselves. They don't realize that for me, just to catch a fish and sell a fish doesn't add any value to the fish. But if I do secondary processing myself, and that's what GreenMart's actually trying to promote, people, you know, okay, you grow corn, make corn chowder, corn fritters, corn, whatever, you know, make whatever you can from your own product and make more money to keep them surviving. I think their policy is to try to keep out people. I mean, actually, you know, and I'm sure you might be a better cook or a chef or somebody else might be than a farmer. But the way to go about it politically would be to marry with a farmer and say, look, I know you don't have the time to do, you know, your chowders, or but maybe, you know, I represent you for you and all that, you know, something like that. But I think that they're trying to make the idea. What I love about Green Market is they're trying to make it sustainable for the fisherman or farmer to stay a farmer or a fisherman.
Right.
Because with no food, no eat.
Right. Which, I mean, I love it too, but my only criticism of the market is that there could be more vendors, and for somebody who would probably do all their shopping there, I'd like to be able to bring, you know, two bags, you know, full of groceries home with me that was going to last me the week. But sometimes I feel like you can only go there for your specialty items. You can't get everything. And, you know, Union Square is huge, and yet you guys are only given sort of two corners, or a corner, really. And then in Williamsburg, in Greenpoint, where I am, it's like, I don't know why you guys couldn't have on Saturdays the entire McCarran Park. So I feel like it's sort of the customer suffers. I understand that there needs to be rules and policies. I think that's good. But sometimes I wonder if they should just lighten up a little bit on them, because I can tell you that the entire town of Williamsburg and Greenpoint would do their shopping there if you could, you know?
It's you know, I think also the surrounding community might suffer as well. You know, they're getting food
That's
now,
true.
But they so you might be drawing from them. So it's not true. Always clear, but so that's the.
Go ahead. Sorry.
That's it.
Do you have any? Is there competition between you and the Blue Moon guys, the other fish salesmen?
No, they're in like 3 days before me, and keep fish fresh. Yes, it's better like that.
It's
you know?
A good thing. Yeah.
And I'm doing my different markets too. He's, you know, other fishermen are in other markets, and I'm in different ones. So,
right.
And also, that's not the only. You know, I'm not just doing green markets. We also process squid for. Clean squid, we're exporting whiting to Spain, sending some fluke to Japan.
Right.
So it's not just the green market that we do, or even green market. I do another farmer's market up in Westchester. That's that you know is actually naked to seafood. So,
What one thing that was really cool working with you was just the array of different chefs and home cooks that you know. I felt like I wasn't instructing as much as I was learning. From, you know, just different people, different nationalities that had different ways of cooking seafood. It was pretty educational.
And it's exactly. You get people, just to give you an idea, Japanese customers, I have a lot of them in 47th Street by the UN, the Japanese mission and the Japanese society is right behind me, so I get a lot of those customers. And and this woman, I have a lot of flounder roe at this time of year, just before the flounder lay their eggs here in another month or so. So the eggs are perfectly ripe. And she's steaming the, I asked her what she does with it. She says she steams it in sake with a few drops of soy sauce and orange juice.
Wow.
And then she only lived like 5 blocks away and came back with it. It was very good.
Unbelievable.
Know, very, very.
And then you eat it, what, with a spoon? How do you eat it?
No, in that case, you know, she already gave me pieces with toothpicks, but...
Neat.
But,
and I know, like, you carry some specialty items. Like, you always hold on to the monkfish roe. Who comes for that?
Monk livers. A lot of people ask. They ask what it is, and then they try it. You know, they look it up on the internet. Some people are game for a new thing, and
right.
You know, and a lot of times I ask them to report back. So,
how do they generally cook the monkfish liver?
Saute or steam.
Okay. It's bright orange, right? That's the stuff?
It depends on the fish, but yeah, mostly are, you know, went off of yellow, yep.
Right. Rick, we're going to have to take a quick break, but I picked us a very special song. I think you're my captain and I'm your nobody is the name of the song. But when we come back, I want to just talk to you about, having the NY... abbreviation next to seafood, which to me has always been a mystery. Like, how is that a good thing? To me, it used to be that I would always flinch at the idea of local New York seafood. So I wanted to sort of get your opinion on the waters out there, and I also wanted to talk to you about some of the regulations that you're facing as a fisherman. So we will be right back. Thanks for coming on the show, Rick.
carry me away if you want to. And you can lay low just like your father. And if I tread upon your feet, you just say so. Cause you're the captain, I am no one. I tend to feel as though I owe one to you. Do you?
Rick, you are my captain. Are you still there?
Aye, aye.
He's like, no, I hung up after that cheesy song. I just wanted to, what I was asking you before is, coming from Boston, I guess I'm a little bit of a seafood snob, just in the sense that, you know, in Massachusetts, we think we do seafood so well. The idea of New York seafood as being, you know, the fact that it's local and coming from you is something that you're pushing, obviously, as a good thing. And I'm curious, like, what are the waters that you're fishing, and what are those waters like, in terms of, you know, everyone wants to know about pollution in New York. How much, what do you have to face in terms of that?
Well, from, you know, I started when I was fishing with my father since I was 8, 9 years old. Mm-hmm. And I learned about life off Far Rockaway. We were catching 2,000 pounds of fluke a tow for 2 hour tow.
Uh-huh.
Right in front of the sewer pipe of Far Rockaway.
Okay.
And it was the best fishing you can imagine. But every knot.
Probably right where
I'm
guessing that's probably right where I go surfing too. What, do you know what beach that was?
No, number? I don't know, but all I know is every mesh had either a tampon or a Trojan mm-hmm. wrapped around it. And I asked my father, what's that? And, you know, and he's like, oh, you know, don't worry about it. I'll tell you later.
We have a name for that surfing. It's called the Rockaway Whitefish, a used condom.
Oh, man. Like, God, so, you know, so the water was murky, and I've never, we're fishing now in 40, 50 fathoms. Mm. And I could see the net halfway down coming up, and the gannets are diving, you know, for the herring or the mackerel that coming out of the net as it's coming up before mm-hmm. it even hits the surface. And I mean, these gannets are down 20, 30 feet, and you can see them clear as day.
Unbelievable.
And so the ocean is clean as I've ever seen it.
Hmm.
And I think the history that you're talking about of New York fishing out of, you know, Brooklyn, I think, is mm-hmm. or Sheepshead Bay, or
sure.
I think it's, you know, the fishing has moved with global warming east. It's made a whole shift east.
Okay.
And you know, the fish that used to, like, but this is the first year we have a real cold winter, and cod fishing is excellent right now off Brooklyn.
Hmm.
You know, and they're all here like they used to be. Cod fishing is very good here. So
great. But
it depends on, you know, this global warming is shifted everything, like I said, I think a whole 200 miles east, and so that's why I think the boats are going where the fish is, where, you know, boats are in Shinnecock, Montauk, are moving, you know, fishing more east, and actually some guys have actually moved to Rhode Island or,
Rick, how far do you have to be, you know, how far, what's the requirement as to where you can drop your nets? How far out do you have to be now?
Well, in New York State, you don't have to be, you know, you could be a quarter mile from the beach. It's not not a problem. So it's not but where we're fishing, now there's closed areas, regulated mm-hmm. areas, there's a bunch of different, on the federal side, there's a lot of different changes.
Right. So we can get cod from you at the market right now?
Yep, but it's the best time here to buy it, yep.
Wow. And what's the best time to find you? Where would you like us to come find you?
Well, as I mentioned, by the UN at 47th Street between 1st and 2nd on Wednesdays.
Wednesdays, okay.
Fridays I'm in Manhattan also as the Union Square at 14th Street. And
yep.
97th Street between Columbus and Amsterdam. That's actually my most improved market, I would say.
Hmm.
I've quadrupled my sales in that area, and it's a lot of Jewish people in that area, and everybody said I could never sell fish there, but I've gotten a great relationship with that community, and it's really taken off well.
What kind of fish would you say that they're buying mostly?
It's you know, you know, scales and tails, mostly, you know, any fin fish, you know, no shellfish, but but it's, and Whole Foods just opened a supermarket there and still hasn't affected my sales. So
not at all. Good, good.
Not at all.
And you still have a guy coming down to McCarran Park in Williamsburg, right?
It's right not, on Saturdays.
Yeah.
I'm in McCarran Park in Greenpoint, and Fort Greene has been my first market in Brooklyn. That's my best market,
yeah,
Fort
that,
Greene.
That's a fun market. And I like that.
Really nice one. And it's Sundays in Columbia University and Tompkins Square in Manhattan.
Wow.
So I try to do two a day.
Yep.
Keeps the doctor away.
I couldn't keep up. I'm just going to tell our listening audience right now, I probably lasted only a few months with you. I just couldn't keep up with you, man. You're like, I don't know, made of stone.
Well, 51, I'm a little bit slowing down this year, but I broke my arm last year, so that really hurt my upper body strength. But it's, so I'm... Through three surgeries later, I'm getting a little more of my strength back.
Wow. And I'm sure, just like old times, you're not letting anybody do anything for you, right?
No.
Stubborn as always.
That's my physical therapy, is lifting a 125-pound tote for them.
I'm guessing you shouldn't be lifting right now, but I know you've got it. You've figured out. Rick, can you tell us about your religious experience out on the water?
Well, it was... when I was a young man, you know, you really want to push, and I just got a captain's job as running a brand new boat, and my best friend was a deckhand, and he already had three babies, and I was only 28, and he was 27, and so there was a May pea soup fog, and we had a good day fishing the day before, and I felt the surge inside the inlet, inside Shinnecock, or, you know, moving the boat around, but I didn't think anything of it. Mm-hmm. 4 o'clock in the morning, just threw off the lines, and we went out going tide, and I looked at the brand new $15,000 radar. I seen a wall of water just before I got to it, and I was, must have been a storm offshore to make a big groundswell. It was a good 10-foot swell, and when I went up in the first wave and down and just buried us bow first and just shook the boat, and then we came about and I spun around and went down in the next one, and we came out of it, and I said, I can't turn around now because outgoing tide is pushing me out to sea. So we finally got through it, and I figured I might as well try to make a living with this guy, you know, try to find something. So we made two or three toes on the beach and nothing, because the swell just lifts everything off the bottom. And so I steamed off 8 miles and set in and figured I'd get offshore, I'd see something. And I looked in the radar, you know, it's a brand new radar, and I didn't see anybody. We hauled the net in, and we had 5,000 pounds of skates and mud and shells and garbage. And I said, "Shit, I feel, you know, this guy worked all day for nothing because of my inexperience. And he should never leave the wheel." And we couldn't see 100 feet in this pea soup fog. And so I would go out, and we'd have any conveyors or anything. I went and pushed with the decos to try to help him get this mess off the boat and help him pick through the fish, see if there's anything in there. And so I'd go out on deck and push, and I felt uneasy. I shouldn't be doing this. And I went back in the pilot house, sat there 5 minutes, nothing. And then I went back out and pushed him, and I heard a little voice saying to look. And I, like, what is this? And I went back in the pilot house, and I didn't see anything. And I went back out for a third time, and I heard, like, 100 people singing, screaming, cheering, look. And I looked, and I saw a cable in the middle of the sky, and I said, what is that? And I saw a bunch of foam around the boat, and I was between a tugboat and a tow. And I ran for the pilot house, and I threw the boat from hard forward to hard reverse, and my antennas just touched the cable, and I backed out just as a 50-foot high, 50-foot wide, 400-foot-long cement barge missed me by 50 feet.
Oh, my God. I've been out in a sailboat. We have a little 27-foot Bristol that we keep up at the World's Fair Marina. And my friends and I, as we walk to the boat, along the dock, we're always talking about how we should sail this thing to the Caribbean and, you know, really make use of having this sailboat. And every time, without fail, when we come out around the tip of Manhattan, only a mile downriver, we're like, we're going to die. And we're crashing through waves. And you see these tankers coming. And it's like, we land is only 15 feet away from us. And it feels like you're going to, that's the end of you. So yeah. I mean, respect to you for what you do on a regular basis. It's scary stuff. Have you ever been rescued?
Yep, that same Shinnecock Inlet. I just had a great, I was the first one in Shinnecock to, actually the second one to put these new winches on to go offshore, deep water fishing, you know, outside 200 fathoms. And I spent all the money that I had, and I didn't care what the weather was, I was going fishing. I went out the inlet and was going 20 to 30 northwest, and I had a great day. Nobody was fishing, it was just me and my brother, and I had 7,000 pounds of squid for the day, all worth a dollar. But I had to beat my way home. It's blowing westerly a good 30 all the way coming home. And because it took me longer than it should have, I missed the top of the tide. So now the tide was outgoing. This boat was drawing 10 and a half feet of water. And a big wave hit the side of the boat and pushed me out of the only 100-foot wide channel that we had in Shinnecock. And I ran aground, and I tried to back into it, and the waves were breaking against the back of that bathhouse. So then I tried to power my way off the sandbar on the next big surf wave, and then all I did was drive myself drier. So I didn't sink, but I couldn't get off. And I, a 70-foot steel boat with a wooden cabin and 10-foot waves were whacking the side of this wooden pilothouse like...
Terrifying.
You know, like 50 guys with baseball bats.
Did you think you were going to even make it out of there?
No, I didn't. I wasn't thinking that way, but, I had my guy go down the engine room. We had all the pumps going to try to keep the engine room going, but I just couldn't get off, you know, and eventually the waves were, you know, broke the engine room door, and all, you know, 3 foot of water was pouring down there, so I lost the engine and electric, and literally we were on the side of this boat for an hour and a half before the Brooklyn helicopters came and got us off. But
wow,
you know, but
was the boat,
it was like going
done?
Underwater and out of water, underwater every 10 seconds, so it was like standing in the surf.
And did you ever get the boat back?
I got the boat back, you know, all busted up, no cabin, no anything, but all I did is I got a call from the Coast Guard saying, what am I going to do about the fuel spill that I had on the beach? I said, you kidding me?
Wow. Yeah.
But at least the nurse kept me warm. I was hypothermic, and I had this really young nurse that went to us, all three of us, and she all gave us a jock massage to keep us warm. Too much.
Tough life you have there, Rick.
It was hard. Yeah. But she broke our spirits. It was funny.
Rick, I'm going to have to leave you here and let you get back to, I don't know, all of whatever you, all of your net mending or whatever you do when you're not out on the water. Are you actually preparing for, are you going to go out this week?
The boat's out now.
Boat's out now.
So that's even better. Now I don't have to fix anything.
Right.
And I'm having a beer and making dinner, and I'm getting ready to go to the market tomorrow.
Fantastic. Where do we find you tomorrow?
Union Square tomorrow or 97th Street. I'll be at 97th.
You'll be at 97th. Awesome. Okay.
Me personally, yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, you guys, you heard it here. Catch it, cook it, and eat it. That was Captain Rick, and you can find him all the way up, I think it's the Upper East Side, in the 90s.
Upper West Side. 97th at Columbus and Amsterdam.
There you go. That's where you can find Rick, and he will tell you just anything you want to know about fish, fishing, or cooking. That's your man. Thanks, Rick.
Take care. And I got to hit the full of Captain and